I was going to do the drums.
I'm Drew.
And I'm John.
And you're listening to The Hourchive, our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time.
All right. 1990.
The year 1990
rolled around and we're all listening to music.
Yeah.
All of us were.
All of us, everybody.
We all were listening to
Milli Vanilli and CC Peniston.
Paula Abdul.
Poison. Run DMC.
What's that Poison song?
Which one?
Every Rose.
That one. Actually, I think at this point we've moved on past that.
I'm just saying.
That we were listening Unskinny Bop.
But that had happened,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
If a cowboy sings a sad, sad song.
That was like a skating rink anthem.
I remember it best because it featured in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Oh, it did, didn't
they? It's not, the song isn't featured, but they quote it to God.
Yes.
It's awesome. Like, they're brought
Every
forth.
Every rose has its thorn.
I forget why because they end up like taking these other people's clothes to go speak with God, like they pose as philosophers or something.
Yeah.
And so I forget which one. I think one of them tells the other, say something, you know, deep, dude.
Yeah.
And they're like, every rose has its thorn. Every night has its dawn. Just like every cowboy sings a sad song. It's excellent.
Yes. An excellent adventure.
Yeah. Well, it was their bogus journey.
Yeah.
I think it was originally called Bill and Ted Go to Hell.
Really?
Yeah.
That would have been a better title.
They didn't use it. Yeah, the 90s started up. We were all listening to some...
The 90s started out with the 80s.
Yeah, it began with the 80s.
It was a holdover.
We jumped right from 1989 into 1990.
Yeah. And man, everything was a mess. Prince was singing songs about Batman.
Yeah.
And
as we said previously, was Paula Abdul, was she or was she not dancing with the cartoon cats?
Yeah, that was before that.
That was happening.
That was 89 it was 89.
Is there more than one video with that cat?
I think at the very least there was like a commercial where he advertised like fruit snacks or something.
Did he have a career outside of that video?
Did Cool Cat ever
He should have.
Did he break out of Paula Abdul's shadow?
Of that duo, I think he had more talent.
I would agree with that. Yeah, how come I'd
love to see him on American Idol.
If he were on American Idol, yeah.
That'd be incredible. I'd watch the show then.
I would watch it then. So the 89, I don't think, by all outward signs, you could not tell what was coming in the 90s from what you were witnessing in 1989.
And the 80s in general were a really weird time for music.
Yeah.
It seems like.
Yeah. I guess every decade is in a way. Like,
yeah.
You have sort of like stages. Like I would say there's like three sort of musical movements every decade.
It's funny how serious the 90s seemed in the 90s.
Oh, God, yeah.
Everything seemed really serious. All the music that was coming out took itself very seriously.
Not a joke, man.
Especially when you compare it to the 80s and what that felt like musically, because it seemed like there was so much...
Walking on sunshine, as it were?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much nonsense happening, you know, musically. And I don't mean that in a... pejorative way. I just mean, you know, it seemed like people were just kind of having fun in the 80s.
Yeah,
making music that it wasn't really heavy. It wasn't trying to...
And even the stuff that was serious in the 80s was sort of like We Are the World. You know, it wasn't like morosely serious or like so... Well, and I guess you could say it was sort of like the 90s were maybe a grittier time than the 80s.
They were trying... It was almost like the 90s were attempting to... be the converse to the 80s.
Yes.
You know, like let's take things seriously, okay?
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff going on in the world.
Quit joking around.
Yeah, quit messing around. But in the, like, bleak earnestness that existed in the music of the 90s, it became even worse in a way. Like, you can't take it seriously because it is so earnest.
Yeah.
When you look back,
that
at least
it becomes
for me.
A joke, yeah. Accidentally without exactly. Even trying. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
That was primarily with alt rock, though.
Yeah.
That was where that kind of lived.
Well, and like that, the onset of 90s music, I think, I guess what I would call like the first recognizable 90s piece of 90s music, like the movement that for better or for worse came to define at least a good chunk of the 90s alternative rock, grunge rock, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it, was like, it's almost as though it was calculatedly anti-80s.
You know,
it was like right out of the gate, it was a reaction to and a distancing itself from what had been popular in the 80s.
Yeah.
And especially like, you have, it's like the complete flip side. Actually, you could say it goes beyond alternative rock. You could say like rap was sort of like a complete departure. Cause you know, rap was like all
rap
like
was fun. In
it was
the 80s.
Yeah. Party rap basically in like the '80s. And then all of a sudden like Dre and well, I guess NWA was maybe a little bit, they were a little ahead of the curve on that, but you know, like it becomes more like serious, like addressing the issues, you know, like this is what it's like living in like a really rough urban environment versus, hey,
or dealing with, you know, serious, you know, mental difficulties or strife.
Yeah. You know,
what's interesting is that it, not the 90s, while it seemed to rebel against the 80s, it used the same channels and avenues through which to spread its message as the 80s. You know what
like,
I mean?
Like the music video.
Yeah, MTV.
Yeah.
You know, the radio, obviously radio stations, but like it was all using the same stuff,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. You know, music studio or music studios?
Labels.
Music labels.
Yeah.
And MTV and all these places, you know, there was really nowhere else to get a message heard, you know, everywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Nowadays, there's the internet, and you can sort of avoid those mainstream channels. I guess it just strikes me as somewhat funny because you know, you're trying to be anti-establishment, but you're using the establishment to do so.
Yeah
You know, and because that's really was the only way to get your message heard across a large audience. Otherwise you're passing tapes around and hoping that people, you know, get their hands on them and
I mean, that's probably still how things got out there, you know. Eventually somebody circulated a tape and then it went to somebody else and then went to somebody else. But yeah, it's, you didn't have like the internet where almost immediately upon, as soon as someone like has a live performance.
Yeah.
Suddenly if there is any kind of buzz, it's like that buzz is everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, in the '90s it was like, screw you, goofy, big label
makeup,
MTV
wearing,
jerks,
hair gel sporting.
Yeah. Eyeliner wearing,
handkerchief tossing.
Who tossed the handkerchief?
Well, I was trying to come up with a verb.
Oh, okay. Well, it works, I guess.
Scarf. Maybe I meant scarf instead
scarf,
of handkerchief.
Scarf tossing. Scarf tossing jerk.
I hope there was a front man that was blowing his nose and then tossing the handkerchief into the crowd.
I love the idea. Woo! You know how they have those like those music collections that they advertise on like late night TV? You know? I love the idea, like it's of one that's like 80s music, and it's called like
scarf
tossing anthems of the 1980s.
Oh man. But yeah, we went from all that to like flannel wearing, no hair kempting. Get it?
Oh yeah.
You like that?
Yeah. I don't think anybody else will, but I like it.
Sneaker dirtying.
Yeah, yeah. Grubby jeans.
Yeah.
Holes in your knees.
Earnest music. I mean, not
in your knees, but in the knees of your jeans.
Holes in the knees of your jeans.
Holes in the knees of your jeans. That's a 90s. Well, that's the compilation. 90s compilation. Yeah, that's made by from the makers of Scarf Tossing Anthems.
Holes in the knees of your jeans, a retrospective of the 1990s. Spans all 10 years.
14 discs. 190 tracks. All with holes in their jeans.
And if you want to talk for hours, just go ahead now.
I like how we went from like the best intentions of the 90s, the most honest and earnest intentions, to the absolute worst manifestation of it.
Two Princes is a good song. You like that song.
I don't. I mean, I like,
act like you don't.
I like that song in as much as it's fun to make fun of when it comes on the radio.
You're so jaded.
But I can't stand it after that opening. I just after I get past the dip part, I just turn it off. I can't do it.
That's not in the opening.
Isn't it?
No, I don't think so. I think the breakdown, man. Right, it's like the bridge or something. Yeah.
So the 90s, they started out earnest, and
it kind of quickly deviated. Well, I guess a lot of this music was happening all at once.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
We focus a lot on grunge and alt rock because that felt like it was predominant. You definitely had pop still going strong.
The influence, I think, was predominant, even though maybe it as a movement sort of died out.
Well, and I think the thing about like pop music is it kind of feels like it just continues to go. Like every decade you have pop music.
Yeah.
And it never feels like it changes that much. Yeah. You know what I mean?
The accoutrement.
As a music movement, it doesn't have a particular decade ascribed to it.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to. But the 90s does feel very, or grunge rock, alt rock, these do feel like they live in the 90s and that they were, they heralded, you know, the 90s in a way.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And so you
come to represent them.
You have bands like, obviously, Nirvana. You have
Soundgarden, Pearl Jam,
Stone Temple Pilots,
Alice in Chains.
Others
bands
that were pretty different from what had been happening in the 80s,
right?
Obviously. And when I look back at those bands, it's just they are to me are as funny as the 80s bands are.
Yeah to a certain degree,
and part of that is because I didn't fully buy in the 90s. Especially the early 90s, I was not that into music. So a lot of stuff sort of passed me by in a way. And I knew the singles and stuff like that because I would listen to the radio. But I didn't own really any of those albums. Mm-hmm. And so when I hear them now, I have a much different perspective on them because I don't really have any nostalgia attached to them. That any sincere or not sincere, any... wistful nostalgia.
Right.
to me, they were
they're just, not tied to any specific memory.
Yeah, or, they were just singles that were playing at the time. Uh-huh. You know, I have other early '90s nostalgia.
Yeah,
but I don't know about you. Did you buy those albums?
Yeah. Oh God, yeah. Well, I was at a time where like I got into music like prior to the '90s. I owned music, but I didn't. And I heard and listened to music, but I wasn't like into music. Mm-hmm. You know, I was into comic books or I was into baseball cards, but I wasn't into music. I was like, I would get like an album for Christmas every year. You know, like my cousins would buy me an album or something that I liked. And so like, you know, in 1988, it was probably Michael Jackson's Bad. And in 1989, it was like a Poison album or something. So like, it was literally like, you know, maybe one album a year I got, and I would occasionally
listen
to that.
Building that catalog. Right. 1 year at a time.
And then literally 1991, that all changed. Yeah. And it became like, that was when, I can almost like pinpoint it, and it's funny because like the one signature event that I can think back to that really kind of tipped the scales was the Guns N' Roses riot, the St. Mm-hmm. Louis riot, and where I knew of Guns N' Roses, I had Appetite for Destruction, but I didn't know anything about the band or what was going on in you know in their world or anything like that,
right.
And then that whole incident happened, and suddenly I guess hearing the two sides to it sort of made me like more interested in like the music industry, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when I started actually like really getting into music.
Right.
So that's like right on the cusp of all the change. So the end of that summer of 91, where you've got like Guns N' Roses and Metallica both mm-hmm. have these huge albums coming out. Like for Metallica, it was the Black Album.
Mm-hmm.
And Guns N' Roses had Use Your Illusion 1 and 2.
Right.
And I was very into those albums. And I was watching, it was Dial MTV at the time, which was the afternoon. This is like when you know that you're into something, when you like, you know, relentlessly every day. I mean, I knew it was going to be the same videos because it was the same videos every day. But I would still.
Is this the call-in show?
Yeah. You had like until I don't know like 3 p.m. or something to call in, and then at 4 o'clock they would play.
They'd
like
play the songs that got the most
in order. They would count down from like the top 10,
right,
based on the number of requests.
This was the precursor to Total Request Live.
Yeah, so it was called Dial MTV at the time, and it was the same songs over and over again. And it was like, you know, Metallica and Guns N' Roses and I don't know, there might have been like some rap in there too, you know, like hip hop and dance stuff. I can't really remember much of it because that wasn't my scene, but I did like
whatever.
I watched that every day.
This dance crap in my scene.
Yeah, get rid of the dance crap.
Play Metallica. That's you. I'm being you.
That's
right
me.
Now.
Yeah,
you be.
It was just me stomping around my room, screaming for Metallica.
To you walking in circles.
Exactly. I had a bed. Like, I had this U-shaped space around my bed. The back of my bed was up against the wall. And I had this like U-shaped space. And I would literally like patrol it. Like just...
Oh man,
musically,
so cool.
Like I would patroll it in tune to the song.
What are you doing, John?
Yeah. Listen to music.
Real music. What? Well, who was the...
Off to Never Never Land.
Was there a host of Dial M?
They would alternate. Like, it was different VJs. I remember it being Kennedy, I think, for a while. And John Norris was one of them.
Oh, man.
John Norris was awesome. He had, like, the weirdest facial structure.
Yeah, he had a strange face.
Just a very bizarre. He kind of looked like the Red Skull with, like,
he had a something strange pasted face. Over it.
Yeah.
How did he become
man, I feel
a
bad. But I just ripped on John Norris.
Well, I'm sure he's a great guy.
Facial structure.
But what a weird face.
Sorry, John.
Yeah. He's a loyal listener.
Yeah.
Man. I've been listening to this podcast since episode 1. And they're talking about my face.
No, yeah. I wonder how he's
next
doing
up is Inner Sandman. This one's for John Dedeke. Thanks for nothing. start stomping around. MTV at the time was really strange because you did have bands like Nirvana and Pearl Jam and stuff like that being really serious, and mm-hmm. MTV was so not serious.
Yeah,
the VJs were like the goofiest, dopiest people on television, you know, yeah. and they were catering to the audience that loved this stuff,
mm-hmm.
but they themselves did not seem like fans of that stuff.
Yeah, when, like, if you ever saw an interview with them, they were always, like, you know, very serious and, like, dismissive of everything. But I will say, like, I can remember, I think this was 92, but it was still early in that era. Like, Nirvana was on the Headbangers Ball with the Headbangers Ball was on Saturday nights, I think at, like, midnight or 11, yeah. And Ricky Rackman hosted it. Ricky Rackman. Oh, you'll recognize him if you ever see him. Rackman. R-A-C-H. That's too bad. M-A-N. He was like a club owner in L.A. during like the 80s, like the glam rock stuff.
All right.
So they recruit him to host the Headbangers Ball.
Okay.
Which, and of course, this is not like... this is the closest thing MTV got to actually like really showing like hard stuff was on the Headbangers Ball. But even it was like, I mean, you didn't see like really hardcore, you know, bands on there or anything. Mm-hmm. They were still major label things. Yeah. So Nirvana comes on there in like 92 and Kurt Cobain is like wearing a prom dress or something.
Oh, I remember that.
And he's like, you know, it's a ball, Headbangers Ball.
Oh,
we're a prom dress. Okay. You know? So, I mean, he was capable of sort of joking along with
yeah.
But,
I mean,
but the music itself did not,
right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna name a VJ and then you name a VJ. We'll see how far we can go.
All right.
Before one of us can't name
this has to be a VJ from that era.
We're gonna try.
I can't say Adam Curry or any of those guys, like the early guys.
When's Adam?
I don't think he was on.
No. Yeah. It has. You have to. And we will probably get some wrong, but we're gonna try.
Okay.
But 90s.
All right.
I'll start.
Okay.
Kennedy.
John Norris.
Dan Cortez.
I don't remember him.
He was the sports guy.
Duff. Do you remember Duff?
Yes. Bill Bellamy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bill Bellamy was great. what was his name? Matt Pinfield?
Nice. I loved Matt Pinfield.
A little bit later, but yeah, Matt Pinfield.
He had cred.
Yeah, he did. He was the only one who actually
he seemed
like,
to
knew
hate
what he was
being
talking
on
about.
MTV.
Yeah, he did. You could like see him when he'd like stand there and kind of rock back and forth as though he was just like
was
seething
never,
with rage.
Never comfortable, ever. you said Matt Pinfield.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of another lady.
Downtown Julie Brown.
Was she?
She wasn't 90s? Really a VJ. She was, because I remember seeing her, but she was on like Dance MTV or Club MTV, which was on before Dial MTV.
Oh,
yeah.
You had to sit through that.
Yeah, I did.
While John Norris, that
I
was
think
his
I
name?
Said him. Yeah.
Well, you said him earlier. You didn't say him as part of this.
No, I did. He was the first name.
No, you didn't.
I named. Yeah. All right, then who was the first person I named?
You said somebody else. Who's Kurt Loder?
Kurt Loder. Yeah. Well, he wasn't really a VJ.
He's a counts.
He was on the news.
I'm counting him.
He was
him.
On
You're
MTV
up.
News.
Your turn.
Serena.
Oh!
Serena Atschulte or whatever her name was.
Scholes? Yeah. Serena.
I had a crush on Serena.
Yeah, I remember her.
She was cute.
I guess Carson Daly counts. Was he right at the end?
He.
And into the 2000s.
Yeah, but he did come to prominence in the 90s.
Yeah, late 90s.
I always get him and Matthew Perry confused. That guy from Friends. Like, I couldn't keep him straight.
How's that guy? How does that guy do Friends and Total Rock Quest Live? Does he have time for both?
Yeah. Didn't Carson Daly like get married to Christina Aguilera or something?
Did he? I don't know.
He did. Maybe not.
Your turn.
Oh.
Serena Alschulz.
Yeah.
Is her name or something?
Yeah.
Well, she was a news person too, though.
Yeah, but if you're gonna say Kurt Loder,
all right.
I'm
well, I'm just
say
saying
Serena.
Yeah,
who was the political correspondent? Cr- Chris somebody. It was like Chris Matthews or Chris. Oh damn, I can't. I can picture him. But I can't think of his name.
Something Matthews.
Yeah,
I feel like you're right there. We'll count it.
Yeah. Okay.
We're just gonna do personalities now. Chris Hardwick.
Who is he?
He hosted Singled Out. I think that was in the 90s.
I remember that name, but I can't think of... or I remember Singled Out, but I can't remember.
I can give you the other host, too.
Yeah, who's the other
Jenny
host?
Jenny McCarthy.
Oh. Well, she was a VJ, I think, for a little while, too, wasn't she? Like a fill-in VJ?
Yeah.
See, there's that middle period where I can't think of anybody other than the ones who were sort of hanging around from the early 90s.
You get a lot of them together in the Rock and Jock
series. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
Rock and Jock baseball, or I guess it was softball. Rock and Jock softball.
Man, I forgot all about the
and Rock and Jock basketball.
Yeah, God, what terrible shows!
I loved them, man. I loved it. I was so excited when that would come on. Something about seeing celebrities, musicians, and MTV VJs
all
playing sports.
I thought faking baseball. Yeah,
yeah, and you know, cracking jokes and stuff. I thought it was hilarious.
It did feel very like summer vacation-y. It did. You know, like
from when you wake up to you go to bed at night. Television that makes you feel alright.
We care about you. We're on your side. Spend time with us and we'll show our pride. Music. We're MTV. We care about you and your family.
Puppies and laughter, bright sunny skies.
Everyone's happy
and nobody cries.
I came into the 90s music scene really in the mid 90s. That's where I started to actually listen to music. Just like you said, I didn't buy music. Or I couldn't claim to be into music up until that point. And even at that point, I started buying music particularly for singles on albums.
Well, yeah, I think everybody does that. Like,
and I would only listen to that song. I wouldn't even sample the rest of the album.
Now, are these cassettes or CDs?
Right at the beginning, it was cassettes.
Right. Which makes it very hard to listen to just one song because you have
I'd fast forward. Seriously. but it wasn't long before CDs were really what I was going for. And I would say that it was actually more like the mid to late 90s. That is my transition from listening to singles into listening to whole albums that I bought and then getting into music in any kind of real way. So my knowledge of that early 90s stuff is only in sort of a passing knowledge of what I'd heard, you know, and what my friends liked and claimed was the good stuff.
Right. See, I started out, I think, getting pretty much everything from MTV. Like, not really even from the radio because I didn't really have the patience to listen to the radio.
Yeah.
And it felt weird even at that point. Like, I mean, I know that there was a time when people like would just listen to the radio all the time, you know, at home or whatever, but I never really got into that. You know, if I was listening to music at home, I was listening to my music. You know, I wasn't listening to the radio, but like,
I would listen to the radio in the car.
Yeah. I would hear it in the car, but that was it. And this was, I think too, at the beginning of the 90s, there really wasn't anything in my area that reflected the same type of stuff I was hearing on MTV. But quickly it sort of shifted to that. Like, and that's sort of, I guess, when you could say that the thing kind of caught on, when 90s music was a thing. It became a thing when there was a radio station that was actually playing the same type of stuff that you were seeing on MTV.
Yeah. For us, that would be 105.7 The Point.
The Point. Yeah, which is still around. It's kind of amazing. And they haven't really changed their format at all. So, it's funny how quickly, like, I went from being like swearing by whatever was on MTV, like, I mean, you know, like where literally I would hear a song on MTV, I would see the video. Great example is like there was this band called Ned's Atomic Dustbin.
Okay.
Which is, I think they were British, and they were like, you know, they were like your quintessential 90s band.
Yeah.
You know? And maybe they got started in the 80s, but they like sort of came to prominence in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I would like see, I'll see their video one night. It's a weeknight on MTV. I see this video. I've never heard the band before. I hear one song one time. I go to the mall
band.
And I buy the whole album for that one song.
And you're their biggest proponent.
I am a huge Ned's Atomic Dustbin fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though I've only heard one song.
Have you heard of Ned's Atomic Dustbin?
No.
Man. Get with it.
Yeah. Don't you watch MTV? But it's like funny how quickly it switched, and like I would say like within 6 months of that. So like I start watching MTV in like the fall of 91. Mm-hmm. By like spring of 92, I'm like, fuck MTV, you know? Like screw whatever's on MTV, you know? I don't want any of that. So at that point, then I'm like, you know, paying more attention to like what friends are listening to. Like I remember like getting,
and they were all listening to MTV.
Some of them were. Yeah. But I had a friend who would like, I had one friend who would give me like NWA tapes, and another friend who like had the first Nine Inch Nails album before anybody else did. Yeah, but this is not at this time,
not
really.
Yet.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
This was still pretty Hate Machine time. I think they got, Nine Inch Nails started getting on MTV the second album.
Right.
But yeah. And then from there on, it's like, it's almost like you can never go back. Once you make that migration.
Right. Once you're like, now I'm against MTV.
Yeah.
You can never again be for it.
Yeah. I mean, you can still appreciate videos, or you can still like a song or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even saying like you don't like MTV, because I mean, I watched MTV for the rest of the decade. I mean, I did like constantly, you know,
well, because you watched it to hate it.
It's like 4 a.m. What am I doing? Yeah. I'm watching MTV, you know? Yeah. I remember like having like 8-hour telephone conversations. Just watching MTV on silent, like muted it and watching it. Like, but there's a shift where like suddenly you stop respecting MTV's music selection as your own, you know, where you stop taking your cues from that.
Do your best, Billy Corgan.
Disarm you with a smile. Cut you like you. Cut me too.
That's good.
Cut that little child inside of me.
Oh, such wow. You're really good at that.
His bones.
That is excellent.
Thanks.
What's, how does... think...
What?
I was starting off a song for you. Let me go again.
Oh, yeah. Wait, what song is that?
Now it probably sounds ridiculous. I'm doing 1979.
Oh, yeah. Shake down 1979. Cool kids never have the time.
He's a really fun to sing
live. Wow. You know what the
first
tonight.
This is actually so one of my first musical like memories, and this will probably really date my entry into music, but the video for Despite All My Rage.
Was that
what it's called?
Bullet with Butterfly Wings.
It was called that?
Yeah.
Despite all my rage, I am still just a rat in a cage. That was like the first video I can remember. Like, not that I liked it, but for some reason, it stands out in my mind. I saw lots of videos before that.
Yeah,
but that's the first time I think something registered with me.
Really stuck.
Yeah, and I hated the song.
That's funny because I don't remember ever seeing that video. I remember hearing the song, it was big. But
they're like in a mud pit or something in the video.
I don't remember that. And I remember
Billy Corgan has
hair. Oh, yeah.
But
yeah, he did have hair back then.
Maybe
in the
it's so, like, maybe it sticks in my head because I hated it. I really hated it. Like, I was like, this is a horrible song.
Yeah.
And then I would go to school the next day and people liked it.
And it was probably like everywhere.
Yeah, they didn't understand. And it was actually a really. It was unfortunate because it kept me away from Smashing Pumpkins in a big way. Like, I wanted nothing to do with that band. And I think, you know, looking back, I probably would have really liked them if I hadn't entered on that song.
Yeah, that song.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bought Siamese Dream, the one that was before that album. Mm-hmm. And I liked like half of the songs on it, you know. But it was still not something that I listened to all the time, you know. It was like a very specific kind of sound. So when like the other one came out, when Melancholy and Sadness, that was the single for it. Yeah. And I remember hearing that on the radio and thinking
that was
like
a big thing too.
Whoa. Yeah, because it was like suddenly he was like pretty much all of Siamese Dream is pretty even keeled and it's very mellow, you know. Even when it's like kind of grooving, it's mellow. But
grooving.
Yeah, yeah, man.
Even when, hey, man.
Hey, man. Even when it's grooving, it's totally
even
mellow.
Even when it's kind of grooving, mellow rock, man.
But then he started writing.
Then you wouldn't believe it, but the next album was like he's yelling,
he's all
and
angry,
he's mad, and
he's
like he
painted his nails black,
he shaved his head or something, and like,
and he's a rat in a cage.
That one guitarist looks like a girl to me, but I think it's a dude.
Actually, I think that was a girl.
There's two guitarists.
What was the song where they go up onto the moon?
That was
in
1979,
the video.
Wasn't
in the
it?
Video, no,
oh, no, that was tonight.
Tonight.
All right.
That was a good video.
Yeah, that was a good video.
They're a big touchstone for the 90s to me.
Yeah,
Smashing Pumpkins, mm-hmm. And they're well, I don't know what they are like. You know, Nirvana is sort of the group that defines that grunge period,
mm-hmm.
right? And also kind of the herald of the 90s.
Yeah.
But Smashing Pumpkins, like, I don't know what are they? They're important in some way
mm-hmm.
for the 90s, but they're not, you know, I guess they fall under alt rock.
Yeah.
But in a different kind of way to me.
I think the difference is like Nirvana and a lot of the same bands that sort of came in that wave were still really unrefined, you know, mm-hmm. like they had a more raw sound.
Yeah.
And like I think they came out of like punk or post-punk kind of backgrounds, you know, whereas like I haven't done any research on this. I have no idea what Billy Corgan, you know, listened to growing up, but like hearing his stuff, I think, okay, There's definitely a richer sound, that inspired
more produced.
Him. Yeah. And I think that's kind of like, where the Smashing Pumpkins, how they fit into it. It's the whether it was natural or affected, the sound of the early 90s was meant to be somewhat dissonant and kind of raw, whereas the sound of the middle mid 90s stuff was a lot more emotional is probably the wrong word, but just a little richer.
Yeah.
You know? And
there's more. Well, listen, it's not right to say there's more going on, but it was just the production value was higher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which I would argue is true on all of his stuff. Like
I think maybe
music.
That's because the music label seized on that genre. And started throwing money at it
mm-hmm.
in a big way because it was selling. So the early stuff that was coming out,
mm-hmm.
you know, that didn't get all the money thrown at it for production. And so it has that raw feel to it.
Right.
Whereas once
it was still an experiment.
Yeah.
Sort of. It was like, we don't know if this will sell. Yeah.
Once that was successful, it was like, okay, let's start giving these guys money so they can, you know, make something that sounds nice in quotes.
Right. Well, and then too, you were looking at like, crossover, you know, you could never sell Nirvana to like a 40 something like adult contemporary listener,
right.
You know, somebody who's listening to Whitney Houston or, you know, something like that coming out of the 80s is not going to listen to Nirvana, but they might listen to Smashing Pumpkins, you know.
Yeah. It's funny, that reminds me of you, of course, remember the band Matchbox 20.
Yeah.
And they were pretty popular in the 90s.
Yeah.
3 a.m. and I'm doing
was that
something.
Matchbox 20?
Yeah, they did 3 a.m.
It's 3 a.m. I must be lonely.
What about down, down. I wanna push you around, and well, I will. Well, I will. I wanna push you down.
Well, I will. Well, I will. I wanna take you for granted.
So they, you know, they came out in the 90s, and my dad is loves music, uh-huh. and you know, obviously loves classic rock and stuff like that. He has a really wide ranging kind of taste in terms uh-huh. of music, but it's primarily, you know, 80s and before. Like okay. he had really no interest in bands after the 80s.
Okay.
And the 80s is where he starts to lose interest. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So 60s and 70s would be his sort of prime
his
spot.
Forte.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And earlier, some earlier stuff. So, you know, Matchbox 20, when they came out, he probably, I'm sure, well, he used to, so my dad likes to make up names for things that I like. Not uh-huh. that I was a big Matchbox 20 fan, but he would refer to Matchbox 20 as Automatic 70. I don't know why, but that's what he called them. And I knew what he was referring to when he'd say that. So many years later, in the 2000s, mm-hmm. My dad goes to some kind of like, you know, work conference. And in the evening, they have a little celebration or whatever. Uh-huh. And the band that has been booked to play is Matchbox 20.
Oh, wow.
And my dad was sufficiently impressed. He was like, they were really good musicians and the show was great. And he bought an album.
Wow.
So like, you know, he came back to them. And they would not be, you know, like I said, like he wrote, I'm sure he wrote them off, and
right.
I can't blame him for writing them
Automatic
off in the 70. 90s, but but then he sort of came to really enjoy their music.
How about that?
Yeah.
Way to go, Rob something?
Rob Thomas.
Rob Thomas, yeah.
Yeah, oof. Rob Thomas. I think they still tour and everything, Matchbox 20, I mean.
Yeah, there's a lot of bands from that era that are still around.
That people just sort of forgot about, like the mainstream forgot about them, but I'm sure their fans didn't, and so they're still touring and stuff like that, and it would be, actually probably be kind of interesting to see a band like that playing live.
Yeah, somebody who was sort of on top of the world and now is kind of on the casino circuit.
But you got to imagine that they've been touring so long, they're probably pretty good live. You know what I mean? Like a band that tours a lot is usually puts on a pretty good show.
And they're probably not like, you know, they're not sort of teetering, you know, they're not like, it's like, it's not a make or break thing. When they go out and perform, it's like they can sort of relax and have a good time and not worry about like, trying to be cutting edge or
you say I only hear what I want to. You say I talk so time, so
we didn't even talk about like the women of the 90s.
No, we didn't.
The female artists.
There was the folksy female.
You say that is okay. Lisa Loeb is one of the most attractive 90s ladies.
I thought
I had a huge crush on
her. I'm offended. I'm very offended. You immediately went to her looks. You didn't her on her musicianship.
I like the song.
I'm just kidding.
But
it's the same thing. I'm sitting here like picturing Lisa Loeb thinking, she was cute.
It's sad that the 90s for female artists was a time of like, you know, we are powerful and we're out there. We're making statements and like.
And all we can think to say is
how
like,
beautiful.
Well, Tanya Donnelly
Lisa
was
Loeb.
Really cute. And I really liked Liz Phair. I thought she was cute.
Oh, man. But Lisa Loeb also, you know, and I only learned this much later when she was on some like random cooking show on Food Network. Seems like a really cool person, too.
Yeah,
like funny and interesting. You know, at the time,
and I think like she had a little bit more spunk than what like that single.
Yes, yeah, that single.
You know,
I don't
think it seemed to be like very squeaky clean.
Yeah,
you know, sort of.
But that's that is a very indicative of a whole group of musicians at the time. So let's pause on this list for a second.
Okay.
Because there's Lisa Loeb.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but Joan Osborne jumps right into my head.
Yeah, probably.
What she's if probably God was
you know what it is? It's the Felicity soundtrack. That's basically what it is. It's like... it's basically everybody who was on the Felicity
Sarah
soundtrack.
Sarah McLachlan.
Uh-huh. Natalie Merchant.
In the arms of an angel.
Who else?
What about... Give me one reason to stay here.
Who's that?
That's what's her face.
Tracy Chapman?
Tracy Chapman.
Yeah.
Give me one reason to stay here. I only know the one part. I hated that song so much. I would get so angry when it would come on. Yeah, I found it so boring.
Such a slow burn.
What about what's her name?
Sing a song.
I'm trying to think of one. All I want to do is have some
Sheryl
fun.
Crow.
Yeah.
Sheryl Crow. Man.
Here in the St. Louis area, much lauded because she was a teacher at a local high school here. She taught music at Rockwood Summit High School.
Man, she was not much lauded in my circles.
Well, I mean,
we pretty much made fun of her every day.
Alanis Morissette.
Yes, her too. Made fun of her a lot.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
My, the thing that used to annoy me the most was the song "Ironic," and how practically nothing in the song that she listed was actually ironic.
Yeah.
You know how you like get angry at things and you respond to them.
Yeah.
So like she asks in the song, "Isn't ironic?" And I would yell, "No,
no,
it's actually not.
No, it's not. It's not ironic. Shut up, Alanis. It's not.
I'll have you know that the definition of ironic is not cover the things that you were listing. They are simply strange coincidences that you're listening and not irony.
You're not even married. How do you know when rain on your wedding day is?
You know what? You know who knows about rain on his wedding day? Axl Rose.
Yeah.
November rain.
Rain.
Rain, rain? Rain, rain. In the cold November rain. Sorry.
It's probably on this list, actually.
So who else is what's the and I know she's on the list because we were looking at earlier, but Meredith Brooks.
Meredith Brooks. You think she's in the same?
Well, no, but
same
she's
category?
A lady.
She is a.
She's a bitch. She's a lover. She's a child. She's a mother. She's a sinner. She's a saint. She doesn't sing it like that. She says, "I'm a."
Right. Just turned it around.
Oh, Natalie Imbruglia.
Did I say? No, I said
she's
Natalie
an Aussie.
Yeah, Natalie Imbruglia.
Right, she's an Aussie.
Uh-huh.
Hello, I'm Natalie Imbruglia. That's a horrible accent.
You sound like Billy. What's his face? Billy Barty.
Hello, hello. I'm Natalie. I've got a song called "Torn." Get it, dude? I'm torn. I'm all out of something. You're all out of something. You know, that was like a very Lisa Loeb-esque video.
Yeah, yeah.
She's no Lisa Loeb.
No, no. Nobody is.
No one is. No one is. And then Lilith Fair.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a whole thing. I know it's a whole thing. It's not a band.
It's a whole thing.
But it, like, took
Man,
all
it's
those
a whole
ladies,
thing.
Right? Lilith Fair is like you, and you. All play together at a festival, and it's for the ladies. We talked about Lilith Fair before.
We did, on the arcades
episode.
And Lilith Fair arcade.
They should have had an arcade there.
They should have.
We could
Maybe
have advised
they did.
On
I
did
go to Lilith Fair.
Yeah, that's true.
They did. Oh, Tori Amos was probably
Tori
there.
Amos, yeah.
Yeah.
My brother named a cat Tori for Tori Amos.
Oh.
Yeah. I think it's about time we put this in the archive.
Thank you.
What do you think?
Right. I want it that way.
Thank you.
It was topical.
Good.
It was top of mind.
Turn it off.
Okay.